Welcome to Doha Debates, where we explore an urgent issue from various sides and try to find common ground. Get ready for a conversation that's well-informed, spirited, civil, and respectful. I'm Karen Given, and I'll be your moderator for this debate. Today, we're discussing obesity. It's a serious issue that affects 650 million people globally, according to the World Health Organization, and those numbers are on the rise. It's also a sensitive topic for many of us, since it brings up issues of body image and self-worth, and it can lead to very real physical health complications as well. Today, we'll be exploring the root causes of the global obesity epidemic and asking, is obesity a choice that we have control over, or is it the result of larger societal failures? Let's zoom out a little bit. Obesity is spreading to more parts of the world. The United States still leads with the highest proportion of obese people at 36% of the population. But many countries in the Arab world follow closely behind, with Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Libya, Turkey, and Egypt all above 32%. Higher rates of obesity put a strain on healthcare systems, and weight issues have led to more than 4.5 million deaths globally per year. And perhaps most importantly, it's an issue that the WHO says is preventable. So how do we address this? Throughout this debate, we'll look at our individual responsibility to combat obesity, as well as the role government should play in promoting healthy eating habits through public health policies like sugar taxes and regulating highly processed foods. Joining us now to debate this issue is Greg Doucette. Greg is a professional bodybuilder, health and weight loss coach, author, and health influencer based in Halifax, Canada. Also with us is Professor Monica Arora, a public health scientist who specializes in the study of non-communicable diseases like heart disease and diabetes that can result from being overweight. Professor Arora is based in New Delhi, India, where she holds many titles, including president of the Global NCD Alliance. Welcome to you both.
Hi, happy to be here.
Thank you.
A little later in the program, we're going to hear from some global listeners who will chime in with their own perspectives and ask questions of our panelists. But let's first dive into this discussion and begin with what appears to be a simple question, but does not have a simple answer, which is this: is obesity a choice? Greg, let's start with you.
My personal opinion is that obesity is, in fact, a choice, not that it's an easy choice to make, but I do believe that everyone, if they really wanted to, if they tried hard enough, that they could, in fact, lose weight. The main reason for that is because to gain weight, you need to be in a calorie surplus. So if you eat more calories than you burn off, if you're in a calorie deficit, you're burning off more calories than you take in, then you're going to lose weight. If you put somebody in a room and don't let them eat, they're eventually going to lose weight. So it is, in fact, a choice, although some people have a lot harder time in trying to lose weight just because of genetic factors, the way they grew up. They have more ghrelin, they're more hungry. But if they really wanted to, it is, in fact, a choice.
All right, Monica, let's get your take. Is obesity a choice?
Okay, so I would first like to highlight that we started this debate with the real problem, that is use of our words. Losing weight may surely be a choice. Obesity is not. It is imposed upon people by the obesogenic environment that we live in. As public health professional, my main argument is why people should put on weight in the first place, that we need interventions to lose it. Obviously, we don't have the conducive food and physical activity environment, which is actually fueling the rising tide of non-communicable diseases, which are the obesogenic food environment and food systems, as well as lack of opportunities to exercise. Unregulated commercial marketing threatens health and well-being of our societies by altering this environment and encouraging the consumption of unhealthy food products, which are ultra-processed foods or foods which are high in fat, salt, and sugar, contributing to the rising burden of non-communicable diseases like hypertension, heart diseases, diabetes, cancers, etc.
Monica, you use that phrase obesogenic environments, and it's not something that really trips off a lot of our tongues all the time. So explain it in the most simple terms. What is it about our global environment that's contributing to weight gain?
So the obesogenic environment is the constant advertising that we see, whether it is on billboards, it is in subways, or we see around the school, inside school. Children who are watching television, watching children programs, or they are going out to eat, they are offered with gimmicks of toys, free happy meals. So this is the obesogenic environment in which we live. So all the time we are bombarded with advertisement and cues which nudge us to choose the food which is in our environment. We are not being pushed to eat healthy food options, or we are not having the right policies which will actually promote intake of healthy foods, like having more fruits and vegetables. They also have policy reasons for it, and they require population level cost-effective policy interventions to be able to ensure people have access to affordable, healthy food environment.
So, Greg, you work with clients who live in these obesogenic environments all the time. Tell us about some of your personal experiences with clients who are overweight and think there's no way I can ever be fit. What do you say to them?
What I really think is important is that we can't just say it's okay to be obese. We shouldn't be promoting that. We need to say, look, it is in fact a choice. By saying it's not a choice, we're taking the power away from people. If you tell somebody, obesity, it's not your fault. It's not your choice. There's nothing you can do about it. People are going to be more likely to just say, you know, it was my genetics. I can't do anything about it. And it takes their power away. So for me, it's important to tell people, look, obesity is in fact a choice. Although it's hard for you, you can in fact do something about it. You have the power to change.
And have you seen change in your clients?
Absolutely. People who have hired me, I would say minimum 50% of the people that have hired me have lost the weight and been able to keep it off. There's one guy I've been helping right now. He started at 574 pounds. He's down to 384 pounds. That's almost a 200-pound weight loss. If I had told him, hey, it's not your choice, there's nothing you can do about it, maybe he's the same size. His goal is to get down to 220 pounds. It's losing over half his body weight. And so imagine if he thought, there is no choice, I can't do anything about it. I think it would be very discouraging for him. I think it's a much more empowering to say, obesity is something that I have power on. I can go for a walk. I can put the fork down. I can eat more fruits and vegetables or healthier foods, lower in calories. And I can, in fact, do it if I really, really try.
Monica, obviously not everyone can afford to hire Greg, and not everyone lives in Halifax, Canada, where he's working. And money plays into this in other ways, too. In the U.S., where I live, we have long struggled with what we call food deserts. Those are places usually in large cities where healthy whole foods are hard to come by and unhealthy processed foods are cheap and plentiful. Do you see that elsewhere as well?
Definitely. This is what I would like to highlight, what Greg said. The moment we start saying, I can exercise, I can lose weight, immediately we are stigmatizing this individual. The responsibility is sent to this individual and not to the governments and the policy stakeholders, because they became overweight or obese because of the unhealthy food options that were given to them. The choices we make are limited by the choices that we have. We have to understand that there are people in developing countries, low and middle income countries, which also are seeing this rise in overweight obesity. And that's because of the cost of healthy food that is available. The food which is served immediately around low socioeconomic status schools, when children come out and want to eat something, the food which is offered or is available is junk food because that is cheap. So, obesity is not a lifestyle choice, but a default choice for many. And that's why stigma affecting people with obesity needs to end. What they hear from their physicians or their healthcare providers, again, they give individual responsibility to this individual. Therefore, we need to combat this stigma, including from the health professionals around people who are living with obesity, and believe that obesity is not a lifestyle choice. It is the environment which is pushing people to be obese.
Greg, I'd love to give you the chance to respond to that.
Well, I do believe 100% there is definitely a stigma of being obese. And by saying that it's a choice, I'm not trying to say that the government shouldn't intervene. I'm not saying that doctors shouldn't give things like Ozempic or that people shouldn't be forgiven for this. Also, people who are morbidly obese, oftentimes it's because of their genetics. They have more fat cells. They have an upwards battle. Also, a lot of times it's because of the environment that they grew up in. Their parents perhaps were feeding them too much cake. They're celebrating birthdays. They're giving them candies. And so as you're a kid, as you're 5 years old, it's not really your choice. Your parents are telling you what to eat. But as you become an adult, you have to say, okay, if I keep blaming other people, if I just put it to someone else, when am I going to take over and have the power to change it myself? So I want people to remember, you ultimately decide what you're going to do. Like, for example, if you're studying in school and your parents aren't encouraging you to study and you're failing in school, it's still a choice. You can still somehow choose to just study more and do better. It's not easy. Obviously, if you come with a better environment, better school teachers, better tutors and so on, it's going to be easier. But you still have that choice. In the end, the food stops here. And going for a walk, it's up to you. You have to decide that. So I really don't know what to say other than you can do it. You can have the power to change.
Well, in our introduction, we talked about how obesity is a global problem, especially in the Middle East and North Africa. As populations there shift more towards Western diets, this has led to a dramatic surge in type 2 diabetes among Arab populations over the past two decades. Monica, as someone who works in public health on a global level, how can countries or communities move away from incorporating unhealthy, highly processed foods, which are so prevalent already in Western diets?
So there are cost-effective population-level policy measures which have been tested to be effective as well as cost-effective. And these include having warning labels on food product packages. People have the right to know what they are consuming, what is included in that product. And the food labeling also needs to be effective from the point of view of people being able to understand. Many a times in countries, the food labels are such that lay audience would not understand what they are trying to communicate. When they would say 100 grams would have this much calories, they would not know how to convert. So there are effective policies which have been cited and implemented by countries like Chile, where they did bring about effective health warnings, and there was population level change that they found in their consumption. This was well published in a report by NCD Alliance. This is called Warning Against Harm. After 2 years, when Chile implemented these warning labels, there was about 27% decrease in sugar purchases, 37% reduction in sodium purchases, and about 24% in calorie purchases. So warnings are very effective. Similarly, there have to be taxes. The products which are ultra-processed, they are cheap. They need to be taxed because they are high in fat, salt, and sugar. So there have to be these taxes. Apart from having general health promotion with the population to be able to get their understanding around what to eat and what not to eat, there is no advertising of these products in the school environment where children are making their choices. Their choices are getting etched at a young age. Some countries do have policies, and India is one of such countries which does not allow sale of junk food around the school and university environment. But also advertising on television, on digital media is a big issue that we need to take up in the current environment, because that's where we have cross-border advertising and all the advertising regulations are being flouted.
Greg, Monica just gave us a whole bunch of ideas as far as government and what governments can do for this issue. What do you think of those ideas?
Well, in my opinion, is with knowledge comes power. Everyone should know what they're eating. It's like you wouldn't go to a store and pick out two dresses and not look at the price tag. You need to know. One might be $1,000, one's $100. You should know that. And so when you go to a restaurant or when you go to purchase something, you should know this is how many grams of fat, protein, salt, all of this stuff in each package. The problem is there's people who are very, very triggered by how many calories are in things. And so they're going to complain. They're going to say, you shouldn't be telling me how many calories are in this meal at this restaurant, because if I know that, it's going to trigger me. It's going to trigger my eating disorder. So that's something else to consider. It's hard to just say there's this one answer, because there's going to be some other people that are going to pose anything no matter what.
And what about, okay, so knowledge is power. We've talked about the idea of knowing what's in your food. What about these ideas of sugar taxes or taxes on highly processed foods, or not allowing advertising of these foods to children? What do you think of those ideas?
I think they sound great on paper, but to put it into practice, very, very difficult, because where is going to be the line drawn? If it has 5 grams of sugar per 100 grams, is that the tax? Is it 6? Because then people are going to say, well, instead of sugar, I'm going to put artificial sweeteners. And then what is your stance on artificial sweeteners? Is that okay? Because the World Health Organization is going to say, you know, this might be potentially dangerous. It's triggering people to eat more. Personally, I think if you drink a Diet Coke, that's great. Other people are going to say that's horrible. So we all have different opinions. And so whose opinion are we going to listen to? Who's going to be correct? Is it going to be the World Health Organization? And if it's 5 grams of sugar, if that's the limit, are they then just going to add in 5 grams of fat to make up for it? So where do you draw the line? And think of all these companies that are making these things. They're going to argue, hey, no, this is not unhealthy. And they're going to be paying people under the table, say, no, mine is good, yours is bad. Somebody is going to make a study to prove whatever they want. And so although I think it's a great idea, kind of like, you know, adding a tax on cigarettes or alcohol, putting it into place, it might be very difficult.
And now we want to bring in some of our global listeners who have been watching this debate and would like to weigh in as well. First, we have Nabila Abbas joining us from South Punjab in Pakistan. Nabila is a vice principal at a rural school there. What's your question for our guests?
In considering the multifaceted nature of obesity, how do socioeconomic factors specific to rural communities, such as access to health care, nutritional education, and availability of fresh foods, play a vital role in the prevalence and management of obesity? And what innovative approaches can be implemented to address these unique challenges? Thank you.
Monica, I'm going to let you answer that one.
Thank you. Very interesting and important question, I would say. Definitely, to be able to make an impact in rural areas, at least in our part of the world, in Southeast Asia, I think rural areas are much better than the urban areas, because they have access to fresh food and also fresh vegetables, whereas it takes time for these products to reach urban areas. So what would be most effective is if we are able to co-create interventions with the populations that we are wanting to intervene with. Because many a times, traditional food is what people are giving up with rapid urbanization. So coming back to our original practices has been found to be very effective. In rural areas, we have also seen that at times the tribal food that they are consuming, or the traditional cereals, which were found to be very, very healthy, are being let go of due to urbanization and, again, rapid advertising of ultra-processed packaged food items. So my experience has been that working in rural areas through community outreach and involvement of the community is very effective in tailoring context-specific intervention.
Welcome to Necessary Tomorrows. My name is Ursula. I am an AI, and I have inferred from your online activity that you have been feeling more dread than hope when you think about the future that is coming for us here in the 2060s. So I have created a course just for you to enhance your capacity for imagining different futures. Necessary Tomorrows, an audio series by Doha Debates and Al Jazeera. Find it where you listen to podcasts.
Next, we have Philip Subu joining us from the Solomon Islands. Philip is the president of the Malaita Provincial Youth Council. Philip, what's your question?
Thank you. My question will be, I understand that not all fat people have an NCD. Not all people with NCDs are fat. Let me give you a good example on the experience we have here in the Solomon Islands, where in the rural area, like Professor Monica said, that people have access to fresh food and other stuff. But still, we experience high rates of NCD here in the rural Solomons. And people, even though people look fit, they don't have obesity, but they still have NCD. And so should we focus more on addressing obesity, or will looking taking up more holistic approach at addressing NCD?
Monica, Philip is asking about NCDs. That's non-communicable diseases. That happens to be your specialty. So I'm going to leave that one to you.
All right. So definitely what I talked about, obesity is one of the drivers contributing to NCDs. There are many other risk factors for non-communicable diseases. So there is a 5x5 matrix of WHO. So the five NCDs have a major contribution from these five risk factors: unhealthy diet, physical inactivity, tobacco use, alcohol use, and air pollution. So the five NCDs we have talked about are diabetes, cancers, cardiovascular diseases, COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases, and mental health. So we have to see, if we comprehensively take NCD, then there are many risk factors. So even if somebody is not obese, they may be using tobacco in any form, they may be using e-cigarettes, they may be using smokeless tobacco, or they may be consuming alcohol. So obesity is one of the risk factors, but a combination of obesity, tobacco, alcohol is going to be a very lethal combination in this individual.
Greg, I want to bring that to you as well, because you work with a lot of clients, and I'm sure some of them are saying to you, I want to be healthy. I want to see my kids grow up. I want to avoid the health effects of my lifestyle. So how do you take, as Philip asked, a more holistic approach with them and not just focus on that weight on the scale?
I think there needs to be a paradigm shift in thinking. I think, honestly, my honest opinion is that the problem is people don't care. They don't care anymore. It's like we've promoted obesity. We said it's okay, love your body no matter what. We've seen Lizzo, almost glorify being obese. And people are just like, nothing matters anymore. And I think that people are focused on the diet so much that they think that no one really knows that to lose weight, it's calories in, calories out, period. It doesn't, if you eat all junk food and you don't eat much of it, you're losing weight. If you eat all health food and you eat too much of it, you're gaining weight. The real answer, the solution, it's exercise. If there was a pill that was invented and all it was doing exercise, it would put pharmaceutical companies out of business. Exercise is the most important variable for your health, for longevity, for, you know, slowing down diseases, everything. I've done 3,000 plus videos on YouTube, and every video almost I say, you need to do 150 minutes of cardiovascular a week minimum, zone two cardio. If you do more, that's a bonus. Put the fork down, eat healthy. So I encourage people all the time, go out and do something you love. If you don't like running, don't run. If you don't like going to the gym, don't go to the gym. Go for a hike, go for a walk, swim, go dancing, go to yoga, find something that you love. If you find something that you love, it's not a chore. And so in the end, it's not so much what you're eating. It's, are you burning it off? Are you getting the activity that you need? And because it's 2024, everyone's on their phones. Everyone's on a computer. Everyone's sitting inside. No one's going out and playing. The amount of activity that kids are doing today, it's so much lower than it was. If we simply moved more, the problems would go away. And so to me, we need to stop shifting our focus on what are we eating and start thinking, why aren't we moving more?
Philip, I want you to respond to this. Do you think our panelists have good advice for people like you who live in the Solomon Islands?
Yeah, but let me draw back again. Like here in the Solomons, in the rural Solomons where I live, some people, they don't have good road access. They will travel by 500 to 600 meters above sea level on the mountains. And still people experience having NCDs. So it comes back to the question of why people who are not fat still experiencing NCDs. And even here in the rural Solomons, people, you know, they go to the farms every day, walk in the farms, gardens, and travel by 3 to 4 kilometers every day. and still they experience NCD.
Yeah, I mean, so Monica, you're nodding your head. So help us out here. Why does that still happen?
I would completely agree with what Greg said. People need to be physically active to be having a longer life and a healthy life. But again, we need conducive environment to be provided to populations. Talk about developing country. And Philip, you can let me know how it is in Solomon Island. I know of developing countries where people do not even have a pedestrian track to walk. Where do they run? There are no parks. They stay in urban slums. They are the worst hit by NCDs because they do not have healthy food options available to them. They cannot afford getting healthy food items. They don't have avenues. They don't have parks to walk around in their neighborhood. They can't walk to their work because traffic is so heavy and there are no pedestrian tracks. So where are the opportunities being provided for these people to be physically active? So that is one part of it. But again, Philip, coming to your question about people who are fat or obese have NCDs, and those who are not fat still have NCDs, we have to look at these individuals comprehensively as to what other risk factors are contributing to their NCD if it is not obesity.
All right. So before we wrap up today's discussion, I want to go back to each panelist and I want to ask you, what is the thing that the other panelists said that most resonates with you, right? So what is the argument that you heard from them that you most would like to say that you agree with? Greg, let's start with you.
I think that everything she's saying is true and it's valid and it plays an impact. I think the only difference in perhaps our thought is that I'm more a proponent of, I want everyone to know that they have the power to do something about it. Although their environment or how they grew up or their genetics plays a large role, I don't want them to give up and think that because they were dealt a bad hand that they can't lose the weight. Obviously, it could be made better by the government and regulations or having warning labels. This would all help tremendously. But I still want people to say, in the end, the decision is yours right now. Like as you finish watching this program, you can go out for a walk right now. You cannot eat that cheeseburger. Or if you want to eat a cheeseburger, eat half the cheeseburger. That's basically the only difference I see in what we're saying.
Monica, same question for you. What has Greg said that you agree with?
Absolutely, I agree with people have to be more physically active. I am with Greg on that thought, but there are a lot of challenges. Stress and eating, binge eating is so closely related. So people have to work on many other factors. Metabolic reasons surely need to be addressed. What their lifestyle is, how they grew up as a child. So there are systemic issues which need to be addressed so that people have a conducive environment to be able to go out for that walk that Greg wants all of us to do and to not eat that cheeseburger, but be able to have vegetables which are affordable for them.
So Greg said he wanted people to leave this conversation with, I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to eat better today. What do you want people to leave this conversation with?
Better knowledge. Please be reading the food labels. Try and understand what is being advertised to you is not actually what the celebrities themselves consume when they come out on those advertisements having their sugar-sweetened beverages, aerated drinks, or chocolates, and the junk that they promote is actually not what they are consuming. So be an informed consumer and take care of your health.
Greg, I'm going to let you weigh in on that because I know this is something that's important to you. Where do we inform ourselves? How do we find good information?
Well, with knowledge comes power. And so I would tell everyone to just not listen to what they think. Like just try and research as much as you can. You can listen to any YouTube person or your friends and family, but do they really know anything? Do they really know what they're talking about? And so the more you research, the more you know, the more you are more proactive with it, the better you're going to do. If the more information you can gather, you're going to make better decisions. And if there was one thing I think everyone should start doing is looking at how many calories are in the foods that you're eating, you learn things and it'll make you better equipped to make better decisions. When I was a kid, I thought muffins were super healthy. I was like, it's a muffin. Then I discovered these muffins had more calories than donuts. And so I'm like, well, if I had known that, I wouldn't eat all those muffins. So if you gradually learn more about the calories and the foods that you're eating, you'll be able to say, I'll eat that, not eat this, and you'll make better decisions. And in the end, it'll be so much easier. Knowledge comes power.
Thanks to our guests, bodybuilder and coach Greg Doucette, who joined us from Canada, and public health scientist Monica Arora in India. Thanks also to our global listeners, Nabila Abbas from South Punjab in Pakistan, and Philip Subbu from the Solomon Islands. Doha Debates is a product of Qatar Foundation. Our podcast is produced by FP Studios and Doha Debates. Our producers include Mandy Lester, Julian Haida, and Claudia Tatey. FP Studios' managing director is Rob Sachs. Our executive producers are Katrine Dermody, Japhet Weeks, Amjad Atala, and Jigar Mehta. To learn more about Doha Debates, please head to dohadebates.com, where you can find out more about our other podcasts, short films, upcoming events, and more. And please, if you like our podcasts, please follow and share your reviews. Until we meet again, I'm Karen Given. Thanks for listening.